This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Back in the 18th century, Austrian composer Franz Joseph Haydn became well known for writing more than 100 symphonies. People referred to him today as the father of the symphony. But Haydn, as he was writing symphonies, he was also writing music for an unusual instrument. It was called the baritone. It looks like a cello in the front, but then behind the neck there's a series of wire strings, and you have to play those too. Joining me now are members of the Durham-based classical ensemble, the Mallarmé Chamber Players. They will perform tomorrow with musicians from the music department at UNC Chapel Hill for a concert called Haydn's Baritone. Takes place tomorrow afternoon at Keenan Music Building at UNC Chapel Hill. And they are with me in the studio today for a little bit of a sample. From UNC Chapel Hill is Brent Wissick on the baritone. Hello, Brent.
Hello.
Also with us on the baritone, Ken Slowick, the artistic director with the Smithsonian Chamber Music Society. Hello, Ken.
Hi, pleasant to be here.
And from Mallarmé, Suzanne Russo on the viola and Stephanie Weil on the cello. Hello to you. You have to yell loud.
Hello. Hi
your microphones are farther. Brent, tell us more about this instrument and its history. It looks kind of like a cello, and then there's a little sidecar.
It's really a member of the viola da gamba family. So the viola da gamba was a kind of lute or guitar that was played with a bow, and gambas were popular from the Renaissance on into the 17th and 18th century. But in especially in 18th century Germany, a version evolved of this six-string instrument where sympathetic strings were added not only to enhance the sound, to ring along with the bowed notes, but with the neck open in the back, you could actually pluck some of those notes, and you seem to have some kind of a zither or harp-like effect that where you can actually pluck accompaniments.
They're the same strings. It's just that now you're playing them from the back and higher up.
That's right. The sympathetic strings are the pluckable ones.
Okay.
So, and you tune them to the scale of the piece that you're in.
Okay. So, but that means that you've got that the very hand that's sort of working up and down what I would call a fretboard, if it had frets.
It is, yeah. It does have frets.
You've got such a fancy design, I can barely see them. But so you've got frets. Now you've got your fingers there, but then behind you've got to work with your thumb, right?
Yeah, you have to do a lot.
It's a lot, because there is the bow hand, too. There's
That's a whole other hand doing something else.
Well, Ken, talk about, you're the artistic director for the Smithsonian Chamber Music Society. Do you incorporate much of the baritone in your music?
We do play occasionally. The interesting thing is that this instrument, which, as you say, is like a cello body, is actually carrying the tension of two instruments. It has the bowed strings and then the harp strings in the back. And so, unfortunately, there aren't many extant historical instruments. We wish we had one at the Smithsonian, but we don't. So both Brent and I are playing copies.
Was it popular? Did people like this darn thing?
Well, the very last baritone virtuoso came to England and played in the 1780s, and Charles Burney wrote that if you were on an island all by yourself, the fact that you could accompany with these plucked strings with the thumb would be of use, but if you sat in the middle of other instruments, it was really worthless. So I think if Haydn hadn't written for his princely employer, Nicholas Esterházy the Magnificent, over about 200 compositions for this instrument, no one would care to see it.
Well, we should probably get a little sample of it and then talk a bit more about the history. So will you play something for us now?
This is a little duet that Haydn wrote for himself, probably to play with his princely employer.
And we both get to pluck and we both get to bow.
Thank you.
Brent Wissick and Ken Slowick performing the song Duo for Two Baritones in G Major. The two will perform tomorrow afternoon with the Mallarmé Chamber Players at the Keenan Music Building at UNC Chapel Hill. Also joining me today, Suzanne Russo on the viola and Stephanie Weil on cello. We'll hear more from them as we go on. It's a beautiful piece, but Brent, let me ask you this about the about playing this thing, because obviously, you know, if Prince Nicholas Esterhazy would like music and he plays this thing and, you know, you're his choir master, you will, or the guy who's working for him, you're going to write him some music. Was anybody else playing this thing? I mean, do you play this plus another instrument?
Yes. Almost anybody that played the baritone probably also played some other instrument. There were a handful of virtuosos in 18th century Austria and Germany, and a handful of wealthy amateurs that could afford baritones and had time to practice them and maybe would get someone to teach them how to play it. So
Ken,
Haydn, yeah.
Well, Ken Slowick, let me ask you. You talked about surviving instruments. Are there many that actually survive from that period, or are there reproductions?
There aren't so many because of this tension problem. And we also know these pieces by Haydn and some other people who were working in the Esterhazy court with names like Tomasini and Burgsteiner and Liedl. But there were other instruments even more complex. The instruments we're playing have 6 bowed strings and 9 plucked strings. But there were some baritones that had as many as 40 strings altogether. And what the virtuosi of the 17th century played, we have no idea because the music doesn't survive.
Can this music be transposed or transcribed for other instruments, and has it?
It can, and Haydn even reused some of the pieces himself. One of the pieces we're going to play on the concert tomorrow, 2 of them actually, are octets that originally included baritone. And then about 7 or 8 later, after the prince lost interest in the baritone, Haydn managed to rewrite the baritone parts for flute and oboe and publish them, which was not in his contract. He was not supposed to do it. But, yeah, so
doing a little
they
freelancing.
Were reused.
Doing a little it sounds a little harpsichordy, but I guess you can't that's too big an instrument to bring in for that little part or something?
That's right. It allows you to have this pluck sound in the middle of bowed singing.
Only about a third of the 126 trios that Haydn wrote for viola, baritone, and cello have plucks in them. And both, I'm sure Brent's had the experience, but the man from whom I bought this and whom we're honoring in our concert, John Hsu, who was a professor at Cornell University for many years before retirement, told me when I bought the instrument from him, he said, "You'll see when you play in concert and you're playing along and suddenly the first pluck notes happen, the people in the audience are looking and say, where's the harpsichord? Where's the harpsichord?" So it's nice to have lots of plucking, but it's also nice to reserve it for a special.
And apparently when the prince was first learning the baritone, he wasn't very good at plucking. And so the first pieces that Haydn wrote for him in the 1760s have almost no plucking, or just he gets to wait a long time and pluck one note. And then as he got better, the combinations of pluck and bow get more challenging.
Now, later on, he was known as that plucking prince.
That's right.
But get used to it, folks, because we may be able to reapply that. So I'm wondering now if we could hear more music to save my career.
Yes.
Thank you.
Shall we do a trio for two baritones with cello that has no plucking, but that uses this heavenly sound that the sympathetic strings give? Yeah.
Thank you.
Brent Wissick, Ken Slowick playing the baritone, Stephanie Vile on cello performing the song Cassation for two baritones and bass instrument. The Mellermaid Chamber Players perform tomorrow at 3 at Keenan Music Building at UNC Chapel Hill, along with members of the UNC Music Department. Also with us today, Suzanne Russo of Mellermaid. We'll hear her in just a moment on the viola in another piece. But Brent, I want to talk about this instrument because I understand it enjoyed a certain revival in the 1980s. Am I right?
Well, John Shu, who we've already mentioned, was already an important viola da gamba virtuoso and a Baroque cello player teaching at Cornell. And actually in the 70s, he became interested in learning this instrument, the baritone. There had been a few German players back in the 50s and 60s. Ken, you probably, I had records of some of the baritone players recorded in the 50s and 60s in
Many
Germany.
Of them were cellists.
And some of them were okay. I mean, they played the music. But John really rediscovered a way of playing the instrument beautifully, I think, and helped us understand the music in a way that a lot of the others hadn't quite gotten to. So.
And, yeah, I know you've made reference to it, and this time we had an example of it, the sympathetic sound or music that it's played. In other words, you're not really hitting the strings, but the very fact that they're so close to the other strings that you're bowing creates a vibration and a different tone, right?
That's right. So if you bow an A on the top of the instrument, there are two A strings within the that will ring along.
And if we play a big chord and then cut off the vibration, you can hear the sympathetic strings just going on and on.
The viola d'amore is an instrument that also has sympathetic strings. You know, this viola of love has the sympathetic strings, but you don't pluck them. They only ring along.
And for that to work, it seems to me that you have to play this in a small ensemble. You wouldn't put this instrument in a big symphony if you wanted the sympathetic sound.
That's right. In fact, the octet-type things we'll play tomorrow are about as big a group as you can get into and still appreciate the sympathetic glow.
Well, I tell you what, I'm going to allow that glow to continue for many more minutes. In fact, I'll allow you about 3 minutes at the end of this to play a tune, so you can choose which song you'd like to go out on. But I want to thank you first for being here, members of the Mellermaid Players, Brent Wissick as well from the UNC Chapel Hill Music Department, Ken Slowick of the Smithsonian Chamber Society. Brent and Ken performed today on the baritone. Also with us, Suzanne Russo of Mellermaid on the viola, Stephanie Vile of Mellermaid on the cello. Mellermaid Chamber Players perform tomorrow at afternoon, at 3 o'clock, with members of the Music Department at UNC Chapel Hill. Concert is called Haydn's Baritone, and it takes place at 3 Keenan Music Building at UNC Chapel Hill. You can find all the information at our website, stateofthings.org. The State of Things is produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Charlie Shelton-Ormond, Katie Barron, and Laura Pelliser. Robin Copley is our technical director. She had help today from Al Wadarski. Brent Wolf is WUNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stacio once again, Mellermaid Chamber Players, Brent Wissick and Ken Slowick. Thank you. There we are. My guests are the members of the Mallarmé Players. They are performing with Brent Wissick of UNC Chapel Hill and Kent Slowick of the Smithsonian Chamber Music Society. You know, I've got time for one more question, Brent, and I want to ask you a little bit more, and Ken, maybe you can chime in too, about whether these instruments are being produced today, and are we still making them?
There are some modern makers building baritones. Actually, there's a local one, John Pringle, who makes gambas and lives in Eflin, North Carolina, who's made a number of baritones. Mine was made in Western North Carolina by George Kalashek in the 1970s, and it was owned by a former dean of the Duke Law School before I bought it in the 90s.
Mine was the second one made by its maker, who was an amateur maker who made about 40 different instruments of all sorts, but the second one that John Shue had, so considerably more developed than the first one.
Well, I'm going to remind you that these members of the Mallarmé Chamber Players, as well as members of the music department at UNC Chapel Hill, along with Ken Slowick, the artistic director, music director at the Smithsonian Chamber Music Society, will be playing at the a concert of Haydn's Baritone. Takes place at 3 o'clock, Keenan Music Building in Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stacio.